This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Right now, we are waiting for Paul Manafort to be sentenced. Like the whole world is, all of Twitter. Sort of, maybe. We'll see where this goes. You know, I shared a perspective with the folks in Minneapolis a week or so ago. I guess maybe 2 weeks ago. I was in Minneapolis for the Blue State Ball. And I just want to share this with you. And by the way, there's apparently a massive Comcast outage around the country. It seems to be hitting us. Our phones seem to be down. So, I've got an engineer coming in. I'm hoping that we can move our phones off Comcast. But anyhow, we'll see what's going on. So I wanted to share with you this story or this perspective or idea or whatever that I came up with when I was watching Donald Trump. The day that I was speaking at the Blue State Ball, KTNF, our affiliate in Minneapolis, St. Paul, every year does an event where they bring in local politicians and they bring in their talk show talent. And, a couple of the local folks who have shows there gave little talks, and I gave a little talk, and, we all just kind of, it was fascinating, actually, and it was a nice party and everything. And I was originally going to be talking about how Democrats and Republicans essentially have different understandings of what the words liberty and freedom mean. This was going to be my speech, right? That Republicans believe that freedom means that the government doesn't interfere with you. That is, if your daddy gave you a trust fund, the government's not going to, or an inheritance, the government's not going to tax it before it gets to you, and that the government's not going to take money out of your taxes because that diminishes your freedom. Take money out of your income in the form of taxes. And the government's not going to tell you that you have to wear a safety belt in your car because that diminishes your freedom. I mean, we've heard these arguments, right? And of course, the flip side of those arguments is, but wait a minute, we're a society. We're not just individuals. And if somebody, if a lot of people don't wear seat belts, we're all going to have to pay a whole lot more for emergency room visits, not to mention lost productivity and friends and neighbors and family members. Anyhow, say that again. Oh, he is. Do we have audio for him too? Let's find that out. Congressman Pocan, are you here?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
I hear you. It's not the world's best because we're using Skype audio, but yeah. Our phones are down here with the Comcast outage, which means people can't call in. But I do have Twitter. We've got two internet providers here in the studio. And so if anybody has, we can talk for an hour, and I have some questions for you, but if anybody has specific questions, go to Twitter and tweet me at Tom_Hartman, TOM_HARTMANN, and I will pass your questions along to Congressman Pocan. So we're going to do our middays with Mark here. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here.
So let's do middays with Mark here. Congressman Mark Pocan. Taking your questions for the hour via Twitter. You got to tweet Tom at Tom_Hartman. And you can add, at Rep. Mark Pocan, MarkPocan, if you'd like. This would be an interesting way to do it. We've never done this before. Okay, so, Congressman, first of all, what's at the top of your hit parade? What are the things that you're looking at right now in the news and in Congress?
Well, we are getting a whole bunch of our priority bills lined up to do after we come back from recess next week. Last week was huge. H.R. 1 was the campaign finance, elections, and ethics overhaul bill. Passed it with every single Democratic vote, no Republican votes. But it is a very comprehensive bill that deals with everything from many of the issues we've talked about on this program, about paper ballots on electronic machines, about getting rid of the purging of names through the interstate cross-check, to making it easier to be able to vote, instant registration of people, same day issues for campaign elections, etc. On the campaign finance side, it deals with disclosing dark money and trying to take a stronger stand against Citizens United. And on the ethics side, it goes after things like the president's tax returns and his business returns so that we can actually get information that every other president in modern history has given us except for Donald Trump. But there's a whole lot more. There's a lot of provisions in this bill. And that was big because I think it was the single biggest issue that brought Democrats into control in the House of Representatives was the power of special interests in Washington. Donald Trump, to his credit, when he said drain the swamp, I think he coined a very clever, easy to understand term. The problem is he just dredged it deeper and built a high-rise luxury condo on it. We actually are dealing with the swamp. And I think that was a really big issue last week that in some ways got not as much attention because of some other things that popped up. But what we're doing right now are passing these big bills. We're having the oversight hearings that did not happen for the last 2 years under Paul Ryan. And we're moving ahead. And this is exactly the way Congress should operate.
There's a piece in today's New York Times that I thought was absolutely fascinating, suggesting that the...
You went silent somehow.
I just went silent. I heard a ping, Sean, and the congressman says we went silent.
It says there's a problem with the connection, if you can hear me.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I can hear you. But apparently you're having the same problem we are with regard to Skype. You still can't hear me, Congressman. Okay. I think we're going to take a break here. And in fact, we are going to take a break here. We'll be back with Congressman Mark Pocan in a few moments, if we can make everything work. We've got a serious Comcast... apparently a nationwide shortage or something. I don't know what's going on. We'll figure it out. Phil, please. We'll be back. It's 13 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with either more of my rant or Congressman Pocan. One or the other. Stick around. And welcome back. We have lost Congressman Pocan. Apparently this is a serious outage. And, just some of the interesting things in the news here. And I will get back to my rant in a few minutes about, the talk I gave in Minneapolis. But Kellyanne Conway... it's, tweeting about how about the college admission scandal, and it says, this is what she says. She says Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman are indicted for lying and buying spots in college. They worried their daughters are as stupid as their mothers. Right. This is Kellyanne Conway's tweet. And Underpants over at Democratic Underground put this thing together. Although the thread is right there to see on Twitter. And so Tony replies, between alternative facts, selling Ivanka's crap, the Bowling Green massacre, and microwaves recording people, I'd pump the brakes on insulting anyone's intelligence. And then Danny says, meanwhile, your boss is selling access to the White House, ran a fake university, and neither he nor his children earned their way through any institution, or more importantly, through life. And then Kristen Thornburg says, yes, it's terrible when kids of wealthy parents get things they don't earn, like college placements and security clearances. And then Julie replies to Kellyanne Conway saying, the superintendent confirmed that wealthy NYMA trustees wanted him to hand Trump's records over to them, but he refused. Trump ordered Cohen to threaten his high school, colleges, and college board to never release his grades or SAT scores. Hashtag summa cum liar. Yeah, that's a good one. Mitchell Robinson replies to Kellyanne Conway, wait till you hear how your boss and his son-in-law got into college. Michelle Stewart retweets, are you effing kidding me with this pearl-clutching character assassination after your alternative facts BS? Sit down, Bowling Green. Sit the F down. And Coco says, did you not get the memo that your boss literally used a fake university for the sole purpose of scanning the gullible with a $25 million settlement? And Kathy writes, so what's next? Rich kids getting out of military service due to bone spurs? I think we've kind of nailed it here, right? I mean, it's like nailed it, beyond nailed it. It's just fascinating what's going on. Just absolutely fascinating. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. We've got a bunch of great questions. If we can get Congressman Pocan back on. Congressman, I can see you on the screen. Nod your head if you can hear me. And, okay, cool. Yeah, we're going to finish this break in 6 seconds, and then we'll pick up where we left off. Excuse me. It looks like we've got our Skype audio again that the congressman can hear us, Sean. So we'll be right back. Stick around. It's 17 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. It's 17 minutes past the hour. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line with us. Congressman, you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Tom.
And I can hear you. And we've got lots and lots of cool Twitter questions for you.
I know. I was looking, finding some of them. This is good.
Okay. Yeah. So, number one, this is from Elsika. How closely is the U.S. following Brexit, and how does it affect us with how we travel from the U.S. to Spain or the UK? And by the way, if you see questions on your Twitter feed that you'd like to take, go for it. But,
sure.
You know, how are you guys paying attention to Brexit, and how will that affect us? And should Congress be doing something with regard to Brexit?
Yeah, my guess is the Foreign Affairs Committee, since their jurisdiction is watching it the closest. I did have a conversation with someone last night, just watching what happened with that vote again yesterday. It was pretty shocking, right? I mean, how lopsided that it went down again. So we are watching it in that sense. I mean, it's something that involves another country in their sovereignty. So, you know, we're not directly getting involved. I don't know how it'll affect any travel. I wouldn't think so. So I wouldn't worry about that aspect of it. But it's something that I'm sure people are talking about, but I don't think we're going to have any direct activities around.
Yeah, it's real. This really falls into the category of we live in interesting times. Yusuf Abdulwahud, my apologies if I'm mispronouncing it, says, please ask Mr. Pocan, will the Democrats begin to speak out against what's taking place in Venezuela? It seems that we're taking down what is apparently the world's largest supply of oil attached to a country.
Yeah, so there have been a number of actions this week, I believe, and it might have been last week if I'm saying it wrong, but the Foreign Affairs Committee actually had four resolutions in front of it, and they were going to do hearings on all four. Progressive Caucus was fighting to get one specifically that David Cicilline introduced, which said no military intervention without talking to Congress, which is what the Constitution also says. The fact that we have to introduce a separate resolution to make sure of that is really because of how that authorization to go into war is used so loosely by both Democratic and Republican presidents. But we were having some issues on whether or not that will make it to the floor. There's three other resolutions, two that are fairly innocuous, one that isn't so much. And I think we lost the connection again.
Yeah, well, I'm talking. Can you hear me? I'm talking? No. Okay, we lost our connection to Congressman Pocan, which is unfortunate because, you know, we were hearing him, but apparently he can't hear us anymore. Seems like we've got, what is the old saying? It's not a problem, it's a situation. And we have an engineer on his way in, and hopefully Dave will be here soon. God bless Dave. Anyhow, so back to my story about when I was in Minneapolis. I was going to give this talk about the difference, you know, what the different meanings of freedom are for conservatives and liberals. That conservatives think freedom means that the government doesn't say you got to wear your seatbelt. Liberals think freedom means that you don't have to worry about getting sick. You know, your kids can still go to school and even to college. You know, it's that's kind of the definition of freedom, that's what's going on. And that was going to be my speech. And then I'm sitting in the hotel, and Donald Trump comes on from CPAC, which tells you what day that was, you know, however many weekends ago that was. And does this two-hour speech, and I'm sitting here watching this thing, and how people are just like, you know, sucking it up. And it just hit me. This is Jonestown. And that was the talk that I gave. I went into the Blue State Ball, and I said, you know, I got this whole speech prepared. In fact, I had it in my pocket, you know, little notes and talking points, but I'm going to throw this away and just go off on what I think is really going on here. I think that Donald Trump is a cult leader. I think he has been a cult leader for much of his business life. I think that the difference between a cult and a mafia operation, basically a mob boss, is pretty irrelevant. That, you know, they're kind of the same thing in many regards. And so you've got this absolute loyalty to the boss and all this kind of thing. But the interesting thing is about the cult leaders. If you look at Jonestown, if you look at Jim Jones, if you look at Helter Skelter, you know, if you look at, I mean, there's this whole series of cult leaders down. David Koresh is another one. These were people who were deeply and profoundly wounded in their childhood in ways that typically involve separation anxiety. And on top of that, they were sociopaths. And we don't know if that's born or made, but, you know, they were sociopaths. But they had this desperate need to absolutely control their own world and everything around them all the time. And the result of that desperate need to control everything is that they would create cults, literally cults, where they controlled absolutely everything. They were the ones in charge. And it looks to me like Donald Trump, I mean, you know, he was abandoned by his father, essentially. He was sent off to military school. His mother, he came home from military because he couldn't make it in the local public school. So the boy needs discipline. He's got ADD or whatever. So they sent him off to a military academy, which he hated. And then he comes home in the summers, and his mother leaves and goes to Scotland and spends the summers in Scotland playing society lady without her son Donald, who's, you know, left to the tender mercy of his sociopathic father. And here's a guy who just desperately needs to control his world and the world around him. And the result of that is cult leader. And, you know, you look at, people talk about, oh, he's a fascist, or, oh, he's something else. I think he's a cult leader. Do we have Congressman Pocan back?
I'm back.
Hey, you're back. Oh, amazing.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not on your end, I don't think. It might be on both ends, but we definitely have a problem here. And we're looking at the Comcast outage map, and it's got both D.C. and Portland, so it's a double whammy.
And this is also, we have bad internet connection in our offices. I'm on a modernization of Congress committee. This is one of the subjects we're trying to take up, because I feel like sometimes we have dial-up activity of internet in this building and in our local offices. But it's been popping up that we lose the connection, and that I've been told it might put me right back in. So yeah. Hopefully we'll figure it all out. I apologize.
Yeah, no. It's okay, we're all good. Bill Downey says, Congressman Pocan, this is on Twitter, where are you at on articles of impeachment? Every day that he's in the White House, people suffer, or worse, and the planet suffers. This notion that impeachment will give him power and divide the nation further is a straw man. I don't know if you saw the piece in this morning's, I believe it was the Washington Post, it's in the New York Times by Philip Raines. Did the Clinton impeachment hurt the Republicans? And he makes the argument that impeaching Bill Clinton actually dramatically helped the Republicans and set the stage for the George W. Bush and the Donald Trump presidencies. I'm curious your thoughts on Nancy Pelosi's position.
Yeah, you know, I think we had a little press event yesterday, Pramila Jayapal, who's the co-chair of the Progressive Caucus, and I, and our position has been that this is a constitutional issue, not a political issue. And I know Nancy made comments in what she saw in her lens, her political lens on it, and that article seems to be a counter political lens. But my argument is, I don't really care about the politics. This is a constitutional issue. If he's done something that is impeachable, it is incumbent on us to act on that, period. Part of what we're doing right now is because Paul Ryan didn't do his responsibilities as a co-equal branch of government and do any oversight in the last 2 years. Now, Jerry Nadler had to do a very wide sending out of trying to request documents. Other committees are doing their work. So out of this, if information comes up that can help get us some bipartisan support, because we do need bipartisan support to ultimately impeach, we need to do that. So we're doing our due diligence that never happened in the last 2 years. But if something does come up, it's imperative on us. It's our obligation. It's our constitutional responsibility to do it.
There you go. I get it. One of the weird things about Skype audio, Congressman, is that once our music starts, for some reason, it kills the Skype audio. So talking over the music doesn't work. We'll be back, hopefully, with Congressman Mark Pocan taking your questions via Twitter here at Tom_Hartman and at Rep. Mark Pocan. His website, pocan.house.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
See, us guys from the upper Midwest, we know how to push through adversity. We'll be back with Congressman Mark Pocan, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your tweets and comments on YouTube. Actually, we've got some YouTube questions as well. And Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you. Having a problem now getting questions, so I'm just going to have to listen to you because I can't get to work.
Yeah, you're stuck with me. Pork Grind asks, Congressman Pocan, what will you and the rest of the Democrats do about opposing Trump's draconian proposed cuts, his budget cuts, to Medicare and Medicaid? And I would add Social Security to that. Trump wants to cut all three.
Yeah, so, you know, the president introduced his budget on Monday, and on many levels, it was ridiculous. No investment in infrastructure that he keeps telling us he's for. It had deep cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, and obviously, there's no way we're going to accept that in what we send out of the House. So it's really a DOA, a dead on arrival proposal to do that, but it shows where his priorities are, and we'll see how hard the Republicans fight for those priorities. Okay. He had deep cuts to Department of Education, Human Services, Interior, all these different departments that affect, you know, that really help American citizens. None of those are going to happen. He even had cuts to the National Institutes of Health, which even when Republicans were in control, we actually added very, very modest increases too. So in a way, it was kind of a ridiculous document because it's not going to be anything close to what we pass out of the House. It's not going to be close to what goes into law. More money for the wall he's trying to get, even though we still haven't given him any money for the wall. So I think people can be rest assured that that document is really more of the president's fantasy and Republicans' fantasy than any reality.
Yeah, there you go. Johnny Joe Johnson, it was just reported that Paul Manafort was given six and a half years, I believe, by Judge Jackson, but it's concurrent rather than consecutive. So, you know, he'll serve basically an additional 3.5 years. Johnny Joe Jackson asks over on YouTube, if Manafort was black, he'd have gotten life in prison. If he was Muslim, it would be the death penalty. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, when he got his first sentencing, a lot of us were very unhappy on the floor of Congress. We were talking to each other because, you know, if one of our constituents had did something minor, they would have gotten far more serious time. In fact, I think someone did in one state voted improperly. I'm not sure if they voted twice or what it was, and they got a longer sentence than Paul Manafort for everything he did. So we do think, you know, that was pretty seriously out of whack. I think the real test now is, will Donald Trump in some way pardon him? And if he does, I think that's going to open up a serious can of worms.
Ricardo Minimi over on Twitter asks, please ask Congressman Pocan who he is supporting for the Democratic presidential nomination.
I'm staying out of it for right now. There's a number of candidates I like for different reasons. You know, Bernie Sanders, we wouldn't be talking about the issues we're talking about today if it wasn't for Bernie Sanders, Medicare for All, debt-free college, a number of the proposals he's put out there. He was the first person who gave a real national voice to those issues, and I have tremendous respect for that. Elizabeth Warren has been a tremendous advocate for a lot of progressive issues. I get in trouble once I start going down the laundry list, so I'm probably going to stop saying names other than, you know, people like Beto O'Rourke, who I think is going to announce is the guy that you would want to be your neighbor or brother-in-law, because I guarantee he would be plowing your snow if you live in the upper Midwest before you got out to shovel. He's just a decent person. There's a lot of people who have interesting attributes coming into this presidential race, and I'm going to wait to see what issues they take up, what they prioritize. But as a progressive caucus, we're going to make sure that the issues we care about, we're going to put front and center. So from climate change to debt-free college to Medicare for all to a lot of other issues, our job is to make sure they're all talking about those things.
Yeah, and along those lines, Mohangi R. Jones, again, my Mohagani, my apologies if I'm mangling people's names here, says we have a lot of Democratic 2020 candidates. How do we not divide ourselves among candidates and come together in our shared Democrat, hashtag Democrat, I would just say Democratic, but values? And you know, that's a good question. In fact, you're the guy who informed me, who taught me that we should be talking about values rather than issues. We should be calling these things values and talking about values rather than issues, because issues are contained within the container, the larger container of values.
Yep. Values unite, issues divide. It's something Nancy Pelosi told us when we got sore in. She said it many times, and I found it to be a very profound statement, because people do connect with us on the values. Individual bills, you can get lost on details. You know, like one provision on one page of 500 pages, and they'll talk all about that one provision. But when you talk about everyone should have affordable, everyone should have access to healthcare, period, and we should be able to do some cost containments on healthcare, who would actually disagree with that? When you talk about the fact that anyone who's smart enough and able enough should be able to go to get a higher education or a registered apprenticeship, even if they can't afford to, we need to be able to help with that. Very few people would actually disagree with that. So when we talk about those bigger values, we're in a lot better place. I would also say to that person who tweeted, you know, part of it is incumbent on us. You know, if someone doesn't agree with us on every single issue, they are not evil. And I think it's important we say that correctly. I mean, there's something I like and probably don't like about every single candidate who's running for president. And I could say that for everyone in my family, for that matter, too, right? And I think we have to be cognizant that, you know, if we do it in a more uplifting way, we can come through a big primary unscathed and be in the best position to win the White House and the Senate back and keep the House of Representatives. So really, it is incumbent on us to, again, just because you disagree with a provision of someone doesn't mean they're evil. We need to be very careful about how we talk about other candidates.
Yeah. No Way just tweeted to both of us an article from the Washington Post about this woman in Texas who, I believe Greg Abbott is the governor down there. I forget the name of the AG, but she got sentenced to 5 years in prison.
That's the one I was trying to refer to, yeah.
For voting while on parole. You know, by the way, this is also happening in North Carolina, I believe. They're aggressively going after mostly people who have felony convictions who didn't realize that they couldn't vote and went ahead and voted. And they're sending them back to prison and all these kind of things by way of basically, in my opinion, scaring people away from the polls, particularly people who might ever have been in any trouble with the law, particularly people of color who are concerned. You know, they know that the crosshairs are already on them. The bullseye on their back, or whatever the metaphor you want to use, and you know they're not sure. I don't know if that speeding ticket qualifies. You know, am I going to go to jail for voting after I got a speeding ticket, or you know my headlight was knocked out, or you know what does it take? You know, like this seems to me like voter suppression. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I completely agree. In fact, let me crank it one more rung up the racist ladder that this White House does. The same is true as how ICE is going after people across this country. We know there's probably 11 to 13 million undocumented people, but we're clearly not as a directive going after those folks. We're told that ICE, first of all, ICE was created after 9/11 for domestic terrorism. We're told they're going after gang members, MS-13, human traffickers, and drug dealers. And we just got an open records request back from ICE that, first of all, they didn't answer most of our questions. We have to appeal it. But about 40% of the people they apprehended in a raid in Wisconsin had no offenses whatsoever. And so people and others had traffic offenses, the ones that did have any offense. So suddenly you're making people like that also afraid to leave their homes. So all of this is, again, bent on if you happen to have brown or black skin, or you happen to maybe be from a religion that's not in the mainstream here in the United States, that they're trying to demonize people. And I think it's true in voter suppression, and I think it's true also in how they are working with things like the abuse of how ICE is operating.
So as a member of Congress, what do you do about that?
Well, on ICE, I mean, one, I think it's been, they're incredibly stupid. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I can affect their budget. And the fact that I had to wait 138 days to get basically an FU, Freedom of Information Act request is what I got back from them. They gave me 298 redacted pages out of 400. And then they didn't answer most of my questions. But what we did find out is, again, they're not going after what they say they are. This agency is being misused by this White House in a rogue fashion to be his personal police force, and we're going to be very aggressive on it. So I've already talked to the woman who's the chair of the Appropriations Committee that has oversight over Homeland Security. They're going to pay a price, so we're going to have to make sure they operate properly. But to be that arrogant to a member of Congress, my first Freedom of Information Act request I've ever had to make is in Congress over 6 years, pretty stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Douglas Clark says Republicans won't pass anything progressive. So what's the strategy with regard, you know, you've passed some really good stuff already out of the House of Representatives. There's a long list of other things getting ready to be passed, but they're going to die in the Senate. So what's the strategy here?
So we'll send them to the Senate. Hope we can get some passed. I mean, right now, I think our resolution of disapproval of the president's national emergency would pass if it went to the floor of the Senate. So they're trying to figure a way out of it right now to get rid of it without having to have a vote and embarrass the president. But there are probably other votes to do just that. But we'll, for like HR1, we'll break it into little pieces and send it over. What we're trying to do is, one, if we can't get it passed through the Senate and through this president, we're showing what will happen if you had other people in charge. So if the Democrats were in charge, we actually could clean up some of the undue influence of special interest in Washington. We can make it so that everyone can be heard through their vote, which is how you have a democracy. We can go after gun violence and have some preventive efforts passed. We can go after things like pay equity and the minimum wage and health care and all the things that we need to. And every time the Senate doesn't take it up, it's another example of what happens in 2020 if people look to have Democrats in charge of the White House and the Senate.
Okay, great. Mike, Old Tech Mike is the Twitter handle. He says, Mike from Fresno, can congressmen and women say it like it is? A successful impeachment would require 20 Republican senators. I'm not sure exactly what the question is there, but you and I talked about the politics of this earlier, and essentially you said, I believe my understanding of what you said was, as we continue these investigations, we're going to find more and more evidence, and eventually it's going to reach this point where it's overwhelming. The political equation, it seems to me, is that if we were going to impeach Donald Trump, rather than doing it in March of 2017, we should be doing it in March of 2019. We should be doing it in March of 2020, just strategically, and maybe the politics of this are kind of beyond the pale. I don't know, but that would be leading up to the election, and all of his crimes and hideous activities would be coming out in the public as a consequence of those hearings, in time for the election, rather than a year and a half in advance where people will forget. Number one, or number two, what do you think it's going to take for 15 or 20 Republicans in the United States Senate to come to that Bob Corker, Jeff Flake moment and say, this guy is not somebody who I'm going to follow?
Yeah, I think for them to stand up to Donald Trump, it's going to be at a point that it's too late, quite honestly, to stand up to Donald Trump. They're going to realize they're past the point of no return. I think they know that their party is largely, their futures are determined by how the White House does. And they're going to keep riding with him until it becomes too late. And I don't know if they'll be able to change direction. I would say that don't forget, much of what our hearings are on go way beyond the Mueller investigation. So there are a lot of areas around the Emoluments Clause and other issues that have not been part of the Mueller report that could very likely come out of the proper oversight that Congress needed to do and that Paul Ryan didn't do for the last 2 years. So I would argue, everything we're doing is still exactly in the right direction. If you're going to build that support of those Republicans that we need for impeachment. And, again, to me, I really want to view it as a constitutional issue, not a political issue. And, we have to do something if it becomes that the evidence is overwhelming that we have got enough support to do it. We actually just have to act. Even I'm not wild about Mike Pence being president, but you have to go after someone who's been that crooked.
Yeah. Amen. We're gonna take a break here. We will be back. It's Middays with Mark, Twitter edition. and YouTube comments edition with Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. You can tweet me, and I'll convey questions to him at Tom_Hartman. Might be a little easier because when he's answering questions, I can read your questions. And, you know, on we go.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Congressman Pocan's website is Pocan.House.gov. His Twitter handle is Rep. Mark Pocan. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and he represents the state of Wisconsin in the U.S. House of Representatives. And welcome back. Congressman Stinkthinker tweets, the Democrats standing for president in the primary are more a chorus, in quotes, until one or two adopt the best slate of issues into the primary cycle. Each member brings compelling strength to their particular pet issues, and then the public decides to join on with the best slate. It's an interesting observation. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. But to add to that, to what extent do you think that the ability of an issue, you know, Medicare for all or free college or whatever it may be, of an issue to, or you know, ending monopolies or breaking up big banks, the ability of an issue to rise to the top of that whole kind of gestalt, you know, the whole world in which we the political air that we breathe, to what extent is that dependent upon the personality, upon charismatic personalities running for president on the Democratic ticket, versus the power of the idea itself?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think his name was Stinker. Yeah. I agree with Stinker. I didn't think I was going to say that today. but I agree with Stinker on what he's saying. I think often, you know, as presidential candidates get that big megaphone to talk about things, that's ways to raise the awareness of an issue. And if someone does a really good job with it, other candidates will then be jumping on, and that'll help elevate the issue even more. To your question, Tom, I think it's a mix. You know, part of it is a personality, who, especially if someone just believes it in their core. I mean, when Bernie or Elizabeth Warren say something, you know it's in their core, right? Their yeah. DNA, why they're saying it. And that authenticity is more than you can ever try to replicate through good acting or delivering a well-delivered, you know, written speech. Yet at the same time, primary voters are often far more in-tune voters, and they really care about issues even more than personalities. And I know they always poll people what's most important, the values you have or the beating Trump. And, you know, it's always split. People want to beat Trump, but they also, in a primary, care about certain issues. And so what we wind up doing is like Medicare for All. There's a reason we introduced a bill, and Pramila Jayapal put a lot of time into a really well-done bill, is a lot of people say they're for Medicare for All. But what does that mean? Now we've put the meat on the bones, and we've got something from which people can have a debate about. And our job is to continue doing that on other issues.
It's fascinating. We have a minute to the break, Congressman. The this interesting twist in the Manafort hearing, you and I were talking about this earlier in the program. Right after Judge Amy Berman Jackson handed down her sentence, which is going to add 3.5 years to Manafort's time in prison, he's still, as she suggested in the sentencing, that he's still BSing her. He's been BSing people through this whole process, apparently because Donald Trump has offered him a pardon. But Trump can't pardon state and local crimes.
Exactly.
And it was just the chyron that I'm reading on CNN right now. Manhattan DA charges Manafort with fraud after federal sentencing. So it looks like these specific charges, state charges or city-based charges, are being brought against Paul Manafort that will obviate the ability or eliminate the ability of Donald Trump to pardon him. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I'm glad that they're doing that because, you know, let's face it, you know, the best people he surrounded himself with is a very different definition of best than I am.
Yeah, amen. There we go. And the music's, you know, swamped you again. My apologies. We've got YouTube comments with questions. We've got Twitter comments with questions for Congressman Pocan. Hey, maybe we'll do the show this way today. Our Twitter handle is Tom, Tom_, you know, that bottom line, Hartman, Hartmann. We'll be back with your questions for Congressman Pocan. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're taking questions for Congressman Mark Pocan on our Middays with Mark segment here on Twitter and on our YouTube comments. These, let's see, I'm looking through these questions here real quickly. A question, Ziggy says, a question for Congressman Pocan. What happened to your hand? I hope you're okay.
Yes, I fell and I sprained my thumbs a few weeks ago. They're getting better, but I look ridiculous, and I'll try to keep my hands down. Sorry.
Yeah. Ken, by the way, tweets, this is just kind of an affirmation. He says, wow, on the Tom Hartman program, Rep. Mark Pocan just said he had to go through a FIA, a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, to get information from DHS ICE regarding their activities on family separations. First time in 6 years as a member of Congress he needed to do this. ICE is Trump's personal police force. Disgusting. Just, you know, people are hearing you. Eric over on our YouTube channel says, I never voted due to a nonviolent cannabis conviction 30 years ago. Literally was just smoking with friends and we got busted. You want to speak to this issue?
Yeah, first of all, I'm sorry. I mean, this is something we're trying to fix. You disenfranchise too many people in some cases for something that now is what, legal in how many states? Medical marijuana, I believe, is legal in over 30 states.
Yeah.
Legal cannabis in many states, I think about 20% of the population or 25% of the population in the country. And we've got people who, for offense 30 years ago, can't vote. That's wrong. We've got to correct that. We've got to go back and make sure that happens and re-enfranchise people. So, sorry we went through these periods of prohibition on things, and I'm glad at least we're in the right direction now.
Yeah. This is a great question here. This is from Eponas Muse. And the question, will Congress look into the regulatory capture of agencies, and will there be any remedy to the right wingers who have been placed in our courts in every jurisdiction? Two separate questions, but the regulatory capture of agencies is one that I think is particularly potent right now, that the FAA is literally, apparently, the only major flight regulatory agency in the world that's allowing 737 MAX 8s to fly.
Yeah, and this is a classic example. What the president said, he's going to get rid of two regulations for every new or whatever the number was.
Yeah.
And we often are watching the rolling back of, citizens' rights because of this, especially labor laws, one I follow very closely. I believe strongly in the union movement, giving workers a right to have a voice in their workplaces. So many things have been rolled back from the Obama administration, and because of that, people are being, again, taken advantage of by some of these manipulative corporations. And how is that in the national best interest? It's not. It's in a few corporations' best interest. And we're seeing this agency after agency after agency, and we're trying to fight back. And now at least we can do hearings and expose this. And Tom, if I can, real quick, that day of the big Michael Cohen hearing everyone was watching a couple weeks ago, I also was in a committee hearing where we talked about the placement of children separated from their families in human service facilities that are inhumane. And all of those are happening. They may not all get attention right now, but we're getting exposure to the issues, and we're going to keep doing that. And that's also very helpful to work on this.
Yeah, one of these facilities, or one of the larger nonprofits that they've been shoveling these kids to, their CEO just resigned amid all these charges of physical and sexual abuse of the children, and these are unlicensed facilities where they're sticking these kids. And apparently, some of them are being handed off to adoption agencies. I'm seeing news reports over 50 of these kids have run through an adoption agency that's affiliated with Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, what's going on, first of all, is inhumane. And secondly, when you look at some of the profits being made by some of the companies, there's a lot of questions about the ethical nature of it. I have Secretary Azar this afternoon, and I've got some questions for the Secretary.
Yeah, good stuff. We just have 15 seconds here until we're going to hit, or 30 seconds, I guess, until we're going to hit the end of the hour. Congressman, your thoughts on what's coming up this next week?
Yeah, next week we are in recess in the House. I'm not sure if the Senate's in or not, but people are back home. It's a great chance to get a hold of your member of Congress and get their ear.
Yeah, so invite them to your local school or something like that to see if you can get a place. Or
set up a meeting in their office, see if they have a town hall. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, very good stuff. Congressman Mark Pocan. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. This was fun.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's interesting anyway. And we will continue Middays with Mark. And we'll be continuing with our program. I've got a whole bunch of great news stories for you. And rather than taking calls, I'll take your tweets and your YouTube comments. And Nate is printing out the YouTube comments for me. I've got the tweets on my computer right in front of me. We can do a talk show here without the talk. Stick around. We'll be right back. Coming up on the top of the hour. We'll
You're listening to Tom Hartman.